Afternoon. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, Pete Zimmerman, the producer, and here we go on the Business Lunch till 1. And we'll start with a couple of numbers that are of note. Let's say I mentioned a moment ago the unemployment number or the jobless claims, but I also want to talk with our first guest about how many weeks of extra $300 unemployment benefits are coming. Now, the word is there's a skinny bill out, and maybe it will be more on the unemployment benefit supplement side than on a stimulus side. But let's see what Jason Turner has to say, head of the multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. Thanks for joining us today, Jason. You're on WGN.
Thanks for having me, John.
You got your ear to the ground on that? What's going to happen with the stimulus? What's going to happen with anything on an unemployment supplement?
Just a little bit. It certainly is needed. We see that in the economic data that we collect on a daily basis. But the lifeline extension that the president signed with an executive order for the extra $300 a week, that's coalesced since we last talked a month ago. And that appears to be roughly 3 weeks worth of benefit, retroactive to the beginning of August. So that extra $900, and then states have to apply for 1 week extensions to that, on a go forward basis to FEMA, actually, as they get to vet the dollars from that pool, will likely run out at some point in the very near future since it's retroactive, and we've got, I think, 47 states now approved for the program, two more in process, and South Dakota, the outlier, deciding they're not going to participate in the federal supplement program. But what's definitely needed is some sort of action from Congress to extend those unemployment benefits that have been so critical to keeping the economy at least pointed in an upward direction as we've seen the recovery take shape over the summer.
Boy, it's fascinating to see more and more states, including Illinois, say, okay, we'll take that, even though that seems to be robbing Peter to pay Paul, but shy of congressional action, you got to do something. And yet, in fact, nothing is happening. Congress went on recess without a plan. They still don't have one. And it's not, the people I'm talking to aren't real optimistic about IDES in Illinois figuring out how to make this happen. I mean, people just don't have any more money.
Yeah, the reality of the pandemic response is we've already committed trillions of dollars of fiscal stimulus to support the economy. And the reality that was even underscored by members of the Federal Reserve with the release of the Beige Book last week is that further fiscal stimulus is certainly needed. And unemployment support is part of that.
Yeah.
Possibly an additional stimulus check should be part of that to push consumer spending higher, because that's the real engine of the American economy, is how we go out and spend money in the economy on a daily basis.
So you would do that? You would authorize another $1,200, say, or $2,400, whatever it's going to be?
I think the issue we sit at from a fiscal stimulus perspective is the Fed has done everything they can monetarily to support the markets and offer some level of support to the economy. The crux is fiscal support, and supporting the unemployed is key to that, but also supporting consumer spending, as we've seen consumer spending fall off at a drastic pace in late spring and early summer. To get that restored to where it was is key to getting the economy back to where it started the year at the very beginning of the first quarter.
What does this mean? Weekly jobless claims total 884,000. They were expecting 850,000. How good or bad is that? What's the takeaway from that?
Well, there's a few things inside of those numbers. The one important thing is to keep it in perspective. At 884,000, we're still at a very large number. This is a number that the prior record before 2020 was 695,000 in 1 week in 1982. So we're still at a very elevated level of weekly initial claims for unemployment, people filing their first claim for unemployment benefits. That's important to keep in perspective. Within that number, though, we've started to see it gradually tail off through July and August and now into September. Some weeks are a little higher, some weeks a little lower, but the decided trend is a downward trend in initial weekly jobless claims. a couple of things that are there that are a little concerning. 2 weeks ago, the Department of Labor changed the formula they use for seasonal adjustments to try to smooth out some of these peaks and valleys we've seen in the numbers in a very unique year in 2020. I think the closeness of the analyst expectations and the headline number this week demonstrates that analysts have got that additive formula in place in their expectations, which is good. The other important distinction here is within the jobless claims number, we're starting to see a disturbing trend of those that were initially indicating themselves as furloughed or temporarily unemployed become permanently unemployed. And that would create a significant economic headwind for us on a go forward.
Yeah, I suppose so. Now that you mention it, I'm sorry you did. Jason Turner is the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. I'm glad you did. We need to keep our eye on this. I'm glad you're doing that, Jason. Thanks for WGN Radio on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET from CNET.com. I just hung up on him. Ian's going to join us in a few seconds. That's my bad. Talk about technology. By the way, two of the things that he's going to mention. One is, can you replace your iPhone battery yourself? The answer is yes, you can, and you'll be amazed at how easy it is. And astronomers using technology, this is what they do at CNET, have scanned 10 million stars for signs of intelligent life. What did they find? Well, clearly none here because I just hung up on our guest. Okay, let's try it again. Hi, Ian, this is John. You're on WGN.
Hi there. I think I got the fat finger trade experience there.
What's fat finger trade experience?
Oh, so one of my favorite moments that ever happened on Wall Street was in 2010, I think it was, when a trader, I think it was, I forget which bank it was, I'm not going to name a bank and not and be wrong, accidentally traded way more stock than expected, than he had planned, and they called it the fat finger trade, and it caused the entire market to, like, drop dramatically inside of a few minutes, and then it rebounded dramatically, too. And it became such a story about all of these automated computer programs that trade when the market moves suddenly just went down, 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 sell, until someone got control, and then it started going back up. So it's called the fat finger trade. Someone accidentally hit the wrong button.
Because of his fat fingers. You know, I was actually then just dancing around the story that you have. It's not the first one, but let's start here. Astronomers find no signs of alien tech after scanning over 10 million stars, or maybe even alien life, huh?
One of the things I love about CNET is our coverage of science, and this type of stuff is really fascinating to me. You know, there have been so much effort and so much money into putting into trying to scan the stars to see if there's anything that's even close. And I think what's really interesting is that this study in particular, done, you know, published in the Astronomical Society of Australia, is actually part of a bunch of different programs, including the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence and all of that. And it's a collection of 4,000 antennas to try and identify anything. And unfortunately, they haven't. And I think that that says something. You know, one day maybe we'll find something, but it's really fascinating that we keep looking and we keep not finding anything.
Hmm. Are you pessimistic then? This is a little off topic, but I mean, they also say there's just so many planets out there properly positioned around their suns to support some type of life. It's almost arrogant to think it's only us.
No, I agree with you, and you know, space is endless, and you know, I love the ideas that have come out of sci-fi, such as, you know, Star Trek's theory that they won't come to us until we get to a point that they think we should join their society or something. I honestly don't know, right? I agree with you that it sounds completely unlikely that we are alone, but I think what's interesting then is, you know, when we eventually find life somewhere else, how it happens, right? And what we were missing this whole time we've been looking. Because it just seems so odd that we keep not finding anything. And there's got to be a reason that we're not looking in the right places.
Back on Earth, there are a bunch of tech companies that are trying to figure out who's at home, who's at work, and how do we accommodate employees with kids and without kids. And there's some resentment brewing out there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a really tough thing. So I've been covering this a lot for CNET, and I looked at a couple of interesting surveys that came out really recently. So the Boston Consulting Group, for example, came out with a study that looked at 3,000 people across the U.S., U.K., France, Germany, and Italy, and they found that more than a third of respondents were worried that their performance at work, who are parents, would be unfairly compared to that of colleagues without family obligations, right? So a third of people who are working, who have parents right now, are afraid that their job's going to be impacted negatively by having to do childcare, right? And we don't have a choice. Well, a tech-focused survey that was done by an app called Blind, which allows people from tech companies and anyone else, really, to join anonymously, and then they verify their employment. Blind's survey found that it was double that amount in Silicon Valley. So it says something that there's a real cultural problem happening within Silicon Valley, more so in some ways than the rest of the country, about how people are treating parents and how they're looking at how parents are forced to work from home.
There was some pushback on that, though, there wasn't there. I saw, was it a front page story in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times? Maybe it was just in one of the subsections, but they said they can't get too worked up about this crisis for you all, since you're working in the only sector in the economy that's making money, and your problem is you have a job. I mean, come on already.
Yes, and that is the response a lot of people get, right? And I think what's interesting here is that Silicon Valley, for a very long time, has been known for its treatment of workers, right? They give them free lunches, they've got like slides in their offices, right, and free, you know, all this stuff, right? They do your laundry. Well, one of the things that's happened a lot in Silicon Valley over the last few years has been a lot of focus on parenting. No shock, right? Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, is a parent. The Google founders, you go on and on and on. All these people are parents now. So what I think is really interesting is that it's causing this conversation. Of course, people who aren't parents look at all of these benefits, like literally you get a bonus at Facebook if you have a kid, and they say, well, wait a minute, why am I not getting some of this stuff? And it's kind of coming to a head now during the pandemic.
Two other stories. I'll mention one. You talk about the other one. Google's verified calls will let you know why a business is calling before you answer.
This is super cool. So the idea is to fight against spam calls, right? And one of the ways that Google thinks they can do this is by working with large companies and saying, okay, large company, let's say Verizon, right? Verizon wants to call me, Ian, about hooking up my internet. Well, what they do is that their automated calling system would tell Google first, hey, we're about to call Ian about checking on his installation. And what would happen is when they call me, my phone would show that, hey, Verizon's calling, and they want to call about this specific thing. And Google thinks that's going to cause us to more likely pick up the phone. And I think it's a really interesting idea. Of course, it means that Google gets in the middle of all my phone calls where they weren't before. And if you're a privacy concerns, this is about to go into overdrive. But it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, boy, that is a privacy invasion. Everything comes with a price. You do shopping and then suddenly you get pop-up ads wherever you go for the thing you were shopping. That's a convenience,
yep,
but it's also beyond creepy. And then just one other story that we won't talk about here, but you can sure go surf it up yourself at CNET.com. Andrew Hoyle's story about how, yes, you can replace your iPhone battery. Have a great weekend. It's nice to talk to you today, Ian.
Absolutely. Take care.
Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET. You can tell I'm taking tomorrow off. You'll all be here on Friday. 12:37, Wintrust Business Lunch continues on WGN. David Litchman joins us. If you thought you'd heard everything you needed to know about food delivery, you were wrong. Here is the proprietor of something called Belly Melly. Hi, David. You're on WGN. How are you?
John, thanks for having me well today. Thank you.
Well, how long have you been in the restaurant business?
Not too long, John. 30 years. I started a chain called Pockets Restaurant in 1989, and still in it to some extent, but luckily I transitioned into technology in the early 2000s, and that's where I've been positioned for quite some time now. Thank you.
What kind of food is Pockets? What does Pockets do?
Pockets was a healthier, fresh food, fast food chain that served a healthy alternative to your normal wear and tear food, and that's what I did for many, many years. But in the early 2000s. I got involved in the technology side of the business and shifted into that part of the business, and that's where Belly Melly came from. It was an ordering system that allowed restaurants to have online ordering at their restaurant websites, and then ultimately I transitioned into trying to find a way to give restaurants an option, a food ordering option that would not make them committed to Grubhub, Uber Eats, DoorDash, and such like that, and that's where Belly Melly is, has come from.
Mm-hmm. I guess there's two components that would set you apart. One is you promised to be a lot cheaper than some of those. We all got an education that I guess you had a long time ago about the nick that the restaurants take with some of those food delivery services.
Yeah, absolutely. The processing with those food delivery services are really expensive and unsustainable relationships for restaurants. Now, we saw that many, many years ago. And so now Belly Melly gives the restaurant the option is having a food ordering portal where customers can order from this portal, but not process at a very high rate, at a very manageable rate. And in so doing, we've tied it into the local community where a customer can place an order from a food app, Belly Melly, and in the end result, at the end of the checkout, they can select a local organization, and a dollar can be donated for every order that is placed to the Belly Melly app. So it's a nice way. It brings everything together, the local community, the local organization, and the local restaurant. So
I get to pick the charity. So what do I have, a menu of options that I'll click on, or how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So after you start your order and you place your order, at the checkout, you get to choose a charity. We have a lot of local organizations we work with, like the Greater Food Chicago Depository, my favorite, and Intonation Music Workshop, in Evanston, the Northwestern Dance Marathon, and the Evanston Black Lives Matter movement there. And you get to choose which one you want to select to have that dollar donated. And it's not coming from you. It's coming from the restaurant in Belly Melly. So they're going to take small processing rate that we're charging of 5% is used to help raise a dollar for every order that's placed. Yeah.
I think you answered a question a lot of people have, which is maybe I don't want to donate a dollar. I just want you to deliver the sandwich. I don't want to spend an extra dollar on that. That's not being rolled into the cost somehow for me, the consumer?
Nope. Absolutely not. This is all coming from the restaurant. The restaurateur is an individual who ultimately wants to help support his local community, his local organizations, and this is a great way to do that. He can now align himself within a local organization. He can have a favorite charity he wants to work with, and in so doing, when a customer orders, every time that customer orders through the app, that charity benefits and his restaurant benefits because he's starting to help his community where he resides in.
So if I get this app on my phone and I'm going to use Belly Melly then, because I like the charity and I like the lower cost for everybody, so let's go. Am I able to order from any restaurants in town or only participating restaurants?
Only the restaurants that have signed up. And that's kind of what our challenge is, trying to make sure the restaurants are aware that there's an app here. Cost nothing for them to sign up. And we have the technology and the teams in place to put their menu online within days, and the restaurant that can order, the customer can order through these apps, and certainly that's how it's going to build. And so I need to challenge the restaurant owners. Take 10 minutes today, go to bellymelly.com and register your restaurant. Yeah. The more restaurants in the system, the more powerful it will become, and the more money we can raise for your local community.
How long has Belly Melly been available?
It's at 6 months old. We've been around 6 months. We've been working on it for 2 years, and I've been working on it for 15. So really, it's really, really been a passion of mine. I mean, it's really an evolution of where I've come from, a restaurateur to a technology provider now to I have the resources in place, the teams in place, and I think I got a good idea what the consumer can want and what the restaurants need, and we really have a partnership here that we can all work together to try to make this a nice place to where customers can order and the community can benefit.
And I guess available on both platforms?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so Belly, I'll search two words or one word, Belly Melly?
One word, Belly Melly, one word, sir, one word.
Belly, Melly. Good idea, and good luck. Keep us posted, and not only as consumers get folks to sign up, but if you're a restaurant owner or manager, here's your chance to check out Belly Melly. Good luck to you, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jen. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. David Lichtman, Belly Melly, bellymelly.com. 1242 on WGN. More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based M1 Finance says it's now doubled its assets with $2 billion. The startup added 229,000 new brokerage accounts since February, which is an 83% increase. M1 has created a no-fee investing app that offers users an automated brokerage, portfolio lines of credit, and digital banking. Pilots for United Airlines say they've reached a deal with the airline to avoid more furloughs. Last month, United announced plans to furlough 16,000 employees, including nearly 3,000 pilots. Like other airlines, United has been hit hard by the pandemic, operating at less than 40% of its schedule. Details of the deal have not been released. It still needs to be ratified by the pilots' union. Boeing has agreed to an independent review of its compliance and ethics practices involving its bidding to win a lunar lander contract from NASA and the Air Force. The agreement signed in August comes as federal prosecutors continue a criminal investigation into whether NASA's former human exploration chief improperly guided Boeing space executives during the contract bidding process. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's Orion Samuelson with the business scene, or the agribusiness scene, oh?
How about Steve Alexander instead,
Oh, that's
Johnny?
Right, that's yeah, right, that's right. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How about you?
I've been thinking about you, man.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good thoughts, I hope. NFL football tonight, John. You may wonder what that has to do with agriculture.
Yeah, pigskin? I don't know. Tell me.
Pigskin, exactly. Got it. Ding, ding, ding. Hog futures right now trading $3 higher. That's the max they can go. That's called the limit at $64 per hundred. Therefore, the pigskin connection. Although nowadays all the pro and collegiate teams use footballs that are made out of cowhide, but we still call it a pigskin. Also, with the Merck live cattle trading 35 cents higher at 105.05. Feeder cattle are up $1.37 at 139.62. At the Chicago Board of Trade, wheat is up a nickel, corn is up 4 cents, and beans are still in the red, down only about a half a penny right now. One of the most elite of the rich old boys clubs is breaking up. Citigroup CEO Michael Corbett is retiring early next year, and succeeding him will be Jane Fraser, making her the first female CEO of a major U.S. bank. Crazy it's taken this long, right? She is currently in charge of retail banking at Citi, so if you have a Citi credit card, she's in charge of that product. Her promotion is the end of a management overhaul that has been underway at the third largest U.S. bank because of lackluster performance. The Citigroup shares have climbed 42% during Corbett's tenure, which began in October of 2012. 42% doesn't sound bad until you look at J.P. Morgan Chase shares, which have been, during that same period of time, up 141%. It's been a rocky road on Wall Street today, as Lauren mentioned. Heck, this week has been up and down. Tech stocks getting hit the hardest. Apple, the world's most valuable company, down 1% after being nearly 3% higher earlier in the day. And the rest of the fangs are mostly lower today, too. An outlier, though, is Tesla. Shares of the electric vehicle company were as much as 7% higher in earlier trading, right now up about 5.1%. Some of that is because of a note to clients from Oppenheimer, which said Tesla would likely benefit from a Joe Biden presidency. Biden, if elected, according to Oppenheimer, is expected to reinstate the Obama-era fuel economy standards, expand EV tax credits, make EV charging stations easier to find, and also buy a lot of alternative fuel vehicles for government use. In for the Big O, that's your money on 720 WGN.
It's 12:51, and this is WGN Radio. By the way, reporting in the Wall Street Journal just now, Democrats have blocked Senate Republicans' whittled down coronavirus aid package from advancing. Latest skirmish in the political battle over the stalled pandemic relief. The bill, which drew 52 votes in support and 47 against, needed 60 votes to advance. Senate Republicans touted their efforts in getting almost all of their 53 members to support it, a show of party unity that saluted them otherwise this year. The new roughly $300 billion package would provide $300 in weekly federal jobless benefits through December 27th, establish legal protections for businesses and health providers, and an infusion of funding for testing and vaccines. They, in order to win over Republicans concerned in order to win over Republicans concerned over the earlier package's $1 trillion price tag. GOP leaders tapped unspent funds from earlier aid packages and cut out the second round of $1,200 checks sent directly to Americans. All of that has stalled. It's 12:52. Let's talk to Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch about air travel. You're always following that, Amy. Where are we going today?
Yeah, I am always looking at air travel. So, you know, a lot of airlines are making a lot of thinking around how can we recover that business travel. That is such a huge piece of things for airlines in terms of revenue. And with travel down so much, more people using Zoom and things like that, not traveling, with a lot of restrictions in place as to where you can travel and when, they're really trying to think about this. So one group that they're targeting right now is people who they're looking at diaspora populations in the U.S. and thinking, okay, who lives where? Where are there large groups of people that would need to go visit friends and family internationally? So United is adding some international flights. In particular, they're adding Lagos, Nigeria, Bangalore, India. They're looking at these kind of long direct flights of just connecting those cities a little bit easier. And they're kind of pulling out of that European market with so many restrictions in place. They're also starting a direct flight from Chicago to Tel Aviv, which previously you had to fly usually to JFK to get to or to Newark. So, you know, a lot of big moves there. American is also planning some new flights to southern India, starting in 2021 from Seattle. Delta has really largely had a lot of these major cities in Africa covered, in particular in Nigeria and also in Johannesburg. But they're going to add a little bit more there, American and United also. So it's interesting to kind of look at, you know, what their strategy is. So they had the director of these international networks and alliances from United said, you know, we're looking at who is still willing to travel right now, who is spending money on travel, who wants to spend money on travel as a way to kind of make up for some of that lost revenue in the business sector. So I think they're really trying to plan long term. But it will be interesting to see, as they're pulling back European travel markets, when those might be restored. All indications at this point are still kind of pointing to it might be a while before we see as many flights to European cities as we're used to seeing.
Do you have a timeline on that? Did you mention a date where those flights are going to start?
Well, pretty quickly. So the one to Tel Aviv, that's starting today. The other, that is going to be like late in the year. So December is going to be the nonstop from Chicago to New Delhi. And then there's a San Francisco-Bangalore flight early 2021. So they're looking to do this pretty quickly. In October, Delta is going to add to some of their South African flights. There's going to be kind of a seasonal one-stop Cape Town flight, you know. So they're really looking to go, okay, where can we go right now? And who is willing to go there and where do those people live in the United States? To kind of look at what cities in the U.S. have big populations. So in particular, where there are big tech hubs, they're looking to, you know, okay, where are people hired from and where do they live and how can we get them to visit friends and family at home?
Home Depot is going to cancel their Black Friday. This isn't the first time, if that's the case, that I've heard about some retailers canceling some of their traditional big shopping day plans. What's up on this?
Yeah, that's right. So, and, you know, I think it's interesting that, like, some analysts have pointed out Black Friday has kind of been in decline for a little while for reasons you and I have talked about. There's so much competition with e-commerce. A lot of people are like, yeah, no, I don't want to get up at 5 in the morning and fight through a crowd. I'll just order it online, thanks. So there's already been a little bit of a decline on Black Friday and just kind of its popularity. But nonetheless, Home Depot has said, we're not doing that. We don't want a big crowd. We want to think about safety and keeping social distancing happening. So what they're going to do instead, though, is they're going to offer their discounts for 2 months, beginning in early November through December, and they've said that people who have the Home Depot app will get a little bit earlier access to some of these discounts in November. So it's, you know, I think it's one of those where like, well, okay, if you download a retailer's app, you're giving them a lot of data about you as a consumer, so I think it's probably a matter of Home Depot saying, well, we're probably not going to get those big crowds this year, nor do we maybe want them, but we can recoup a little bit and see some silver lining because we could get data from customers and market to them for longer than the holiday shopping season if we can get them to download the app or shop online and things like that. And indeed, there are other stores that are kind of talking this way, you know, Walmart, that they're not going to be open on Thanksgiving. just like Home Depot, not going to be open on Thanksgiving. Yeah. I think as we get closer to that, we'll probably see a lot more of these big, big stores going, you know what, can you just shop online? That'd be great. And trying to find a way to drive data acquisition of customers to learn more about consumer behavior online in this e-commerce space. It was kind of a question they were struggling with before the pandemic, that the pandemic's only accelerated.
Amy Guth on the Business Scene on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for your time, Amy.
Thanks, John.